Hello and welcome to the August edition of the Organic Gardening Podcast, where we chat and answer your questions. I'm Fiona Taylor, and in a moment I'll be joined by my colleagues at Garden Organic, Chris Collins and Dr. Anton Rosenfeld. It's been an incredibly dry summer this year, and we've been dealing with extreme heat and drought conditions. How have our veg patches fared? We've had reports of cabbages being overrun with flea beetle, tomatoes seemingly refusing to ripen, and leafy greens like spinach running to seed before producing any crop at all. In a moment, Chris and I will be chatting about how to mitigate common garden problems that have been caused by the dry weather, and later on, Anton will join us to answer your questions. Perhaps you're gardening as you listen along to this podcast, or perhaps you're hiding away from one of the multiple heat waves. For me, it's time to join Chris in our virtual potting shed. Hello there, Chris. How are you?
I'm good, Fiona. How are you?
Yeah, I'm okay. Thank you. Bit hot.
A little bit toasty.
Yeah.
I don't mind it, but some of the plants don't seem to be enjoying it too much.
It's just the kind of length of the heat, isn't it? That's the problem.
I think, isn't it? It must be getting on for 3 months before we've seen any proper rain in London, I think. It's like bone dry.
Yeah.
I've been working in it. I worked in it when it was 36 degrees and I'm just like half the pace I normally have.
It really does, you just have to slow it down.
Yeah, I think you should go and lie down in the afternoon when it's that hot.
Yes, really, I know. Bring back the siesta. Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, I think the only thing that has given any relief in my garden anyway is being able to continue to water. I mean, we haven't had a hose pipe ban near us. I don't know about you.
Well, they're just banned. So I don't really use a hose anyway, but if I was looking after something much bigger, then maybe that would be a problem. But
yeah,
obviously the balcony, I could just water by can, and the allotment has been interesting because it's been probably my 10 years I've been there, it's been the worst year, I think.
Really?
Just because I've not been able to be down there every 5 minutes. Mm. And all the retirees' allotments look great because they're down there watering all the time, but it's been tricky. Some plants, particularly brassicas, and a lot of the salad plants bolting really quickly and stuff like, even though sort of tomatoes are not really ripening, the beets have put on quite a lot of foliage and not really produced that much underneath. And so it's been a bit of a weird year, but it's obviously down. No, a lot of heat and no water's about to have an effect.
Yeah. I mean, you say no water, but I mean, obviously you must have to do some water.
Yeah, I do. I'm down every 3 or 4 days. Yeah, and I deep water, which is what I try to do.
Yep.
So I'll puddle, which means I've been mulching around the courgettes and the runner beans and stuff. So I'll sort of form a ridge around the plant. So when you water it, it collects. Like a puddle.
Yeah, okay.
As it says on the tin. And I'll just do that. And that's quite a deep watering, so I don't have to keep going back there all the time.
Yeah.
And I think that's more beneficial because you want to force the roots of the plant down to search for the moisture, really, rather than all be up on the surface waiting for it.
Mm. Yes. I mean, I haven't really got much to report on the harvesting, but one thing that has been a real joy is that I planted 2 rows of beans, kind of on one structure. So you've got kind of the structure in the middle and then the beans going up either side with kind of strings coming down to the soil. And I sowed, I think, 7 different types of bean.
Well,
it's just been a joy because nearly every single one is a different coloured flower.
Right.
So I've even got...
they're very beautiful plants.
I've got a blue flower, I've got a pink flower, I've got red flower, I've got white flowers, and that's been really fun to watch that sort of, you know, come up. I've no idea what the harvest is going to be like.
They're fully in flower at the moment, aren't they? But there's very little fruit development coming along.
Yeah. I guess this is going to be the thing. I can't tell on beans really yet. Maybe I was a bit later than other people, I don't know. But the plants themselves are putting on a lovely show, but whether I'll get much in the way of harvest, I don't know.
The bees will love them, that's for sure.
Yes.
It's not been an easy summer for them either.
I know. I mean, that's a worry as well, isn't it? Making sure that there's little pockets of water around for bees.
Yeah, I've been putting bowls out with flint in so they can
fill a
bit of water and see if I can get into that. And the rabbits have been giving me a great old time because I think they're... Well, they obviously drop... There's no moisture for them as well. So they've been... So I put quite a few new plants in, herbaceous plants that grew from seed, and they were attacking those straight away. And now I notice there's a lot of burrowing, and I wonder whether it's because they're going down for moisture or...
Yes.
So I think there's definitely a wider thing.
We can
turn on a tap, like a bee can't do that. So.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, do you find there are any? Is there anything on your allotment or on your balcony, or just generally in the gardening that you do professionally, where you just don't water? You just let the plant do its thing.
Yeah, well, certainly lawn. I wouldn't be watering any lawns. I don't see the point. The grass is quite clever. You know, whether it's the middle of winter with frost on it or dry summer, it'll just stop growing. It'll survive as a root, and then it'll come back when the times are better. Anything, any trees or shrubs over 2 years or one season, I probably wouldn't bother with either.
Right.
Let them stand on their own feet. If it was a precious collection, you were at a botanic garden, you might look at that differently, but bog standard shrubs and trees, I probably wouldn't bother. One first season trees, I'd definitely water, but after that, I think they should be able to cope on their own, really.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I have noticed an awful lot of tree stress.
Yeah, they'll go, you'll have an early autumn this year. Mm. I think it's already happening in London. I can see quite a lot of stuff. I think there again, they'll go, well, I'm stressed out, I'm better off going to sleep.
it's quite
clever, really.
What about fruit trees?
Well, I've noticed, I don't know about you, but I've got quite a lot of fruit on the fruit trees, and I've mulched them. It's a good time to mulch them as well, try and retain moisture. But the root doesn't seems quite small to me. I've got no scientific explanation for this, but it looks like they're a bit more behind than they'd normally be.
So smaller, so apples or...
Pear as well. It's quite small.
Yes, I have noticed much smaller pears, that's true. And a reasonable abundance of them, but smaller fruit. But I guess it's the rain that swells them, is it?
I suppose it might be, yeah. There's not the moisture there. It's nothing I'm scientifically qualified. I just noticed it. No, tomatoes I've noticed have not been ripening and much smaller. I've got lots of tomatoes on the balcony, but they're nowhere near the size they normally are. And
right, okay.
Maybe the moisture levels is a problem for it, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's been really dry. The driest I can remember, really.
Yeah, yeah. And is there anything we could be doing, particularly with our fruit trees, to try and enhance that? I mean, you know, there's the June drop, isn't there? And so it thins out naturally. Should we be thinning it out?
Or? Well, it's worth a go, I think, if you wanted to. I'm looking at a lot of mine and that all to look after, and I'm thinking that. I'm thinking maybe if I'd thinned. But I'd probably wait to see if it was cooler and we got some rain first rather than do that. And just because that would probably... prompt me, but maybe that's worth a go. Certainly mulching them at the moment, younger trees particularly, probably wouldn't do any harm.
Let's talk a bit about mulches, because they are, you know, a real boon, aren't they, at this time of year? And they're covering the soil, they're making sure that that any kind of moisture and coolness is kind of locked in. But what's the best way to apply it to get the best out of mulch? Because I kind of think, well, if I just shove a load of mulch on, that's not going to change anything.
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly depth matters. If I'm mulching, say, an apple tree, I would probably mulch out to the crown. That's how I'd do it, the radius of the crown. I'd certainly dip it. I'd dip it in the centre and ridge it around the edges so I could puddle. Minimum 7.5 centimetres, so quite nice and thick.
Yeah.
So it's quite focused, really.
Yeah.
So a courgette, I mulch my courgette. So I'll mulch a courgette to the edge of the leaf, to the tip of the leaf as well, and leave a ridge as well. But you want to be quite frugal with it, because it's not... It's compost, isn't it?
So
you don't want to be just throwing. I wouldn't do a whole bed with it, you know.
Okay.
Me, I'll be more concise with it. Maybe I'd do a whole bed if I had enough of it, but I don't, so I'd probably be more concise with
it. Okay, so just be really targeted.
Yeah, I think so.
Of course, the other thing that we often talk about is green manure. Sowing your green manures. Are you doing a bit of that?
I have. I've not germinated yet. I put a load of mustard down. I've got gaps opening up. I sowed quite a lot of seed, and the lack of moisture means germination has been quite patchy. But the actual mustard I've put down as a broadcast, quite a thick sowing, in areas that are now empty. And hopefully that will come up. Yeah, but I've got to keep it watered because it'll sit there otherwise.
Yeah. So I've got a beautiful packet of red clover. And I bought it, I don't know, about 4 or 5 weeks ago. And I was really excited because it was a particularly sort of vibrant packet. And I thought, oh, yeah, I'm going to have my red clover. I've lost
the city packet, Chris. I've put it somewhere.
can't find it
anywhere. So every time I think, right, I'm going to go out there and can't find it.
You need your little bit of, I have mine in a little bit, almost in a bit of Tupperware.
Oh, I need to get more organised.
Because I carry it around with me. It's always in my work bag.
Isn't that the case with gardening? If you're not organised, you spend the whole time faffing it out.
Yeah, and sack of tears are a classic. I'm always putting them down, wondering where they are.
I know. Yeah. Exactly. Well, it's not, I tell you, and then I put the trowel down, or I put the trowel in the ground and forget about it. Then find it in the winter.
I put down a pair of scissors, quite a nice pair of scissors, like floral scissors, and I can't find them. They've gone for a burn. I've got a feeding there in the compost heap, actually.
I tell you what, I lost, during lockdown, I lost my glasses in the garden. Yeah. And I found them last year.
Did you? Yeah. Yeah, it's true. You kind of, and also, you kind of, when I garden, I tend to have multiple jobs going. The best way to achieve the most is I'll start 3 or 4 jobs and I'll rotate.
Yeah.
So it's quite easy to put things down and lose them in that process.
Yeah.
But it's the best way of getting a lot done, I'm sure of it. Yeah.
Well, when I do locate my packet of red clover, or in fact any of the seeds that that would be good for sowing, how should I be sowing? Because it just seems to me, I'm recoiling against the idea of sowing. It feels far too hot, far too dry.
Yeah.
I feel like the second I've put the seed in, if I do it in module trays, the module will dry out. What are your tips for sowing?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think it is irrigation, really. I mean, for stuff like that I'm going to eat particularly, I'm starting them in modules in the greenhouse and I'll keep them moist and watering is key, and I'll keep them and I'll sit them until I think the times are better.
So even your greenhouse isn't too hot?
No, I've got it well ventilated. It's quite shady in there as well. So it's... But if I didn't water it for a couple of days, it became over. So it's absolutely focused on that, keeping the moisture. And when it comes to green manures, I'll broadcast them. So I'll put them in quite thickly over an area of ground. But again, if you're not watering, seed's not going to germinate if there's no moisture in the ground. No. It's just not going to do it. No. So it's difficult. And a lot of seeds, especially lettuce and salad leaves, if the ground's too warm, it won't germinate anyway.
No.
It'll just not think it's not worth it. So,
So
the heat's an inhibitor in many ways.
Yes. Okay, so with that in mind, you said you were sowing some food crops in your greenhouse.
Yep.
What kind of crops are those?
Well, I'm going for stuff that's more hot climate-y, really. So Mazuma was really successful last year for me. Certainly spring onions been quite good. Salad leaves, there's quite a few different Italian types of salad leaf I'll sow as well. Indian mustard's been really successful.
Okay.
So all of those have gone in. I even do a few beets. They'll be going in as well. So it's quite a lot. I've even sown a few late French beans to see if I'll get anything out of them. Yeah.
But not too late for maybe some carrots or parsnips?
Well, I've sowed those as well.
Okay.
I have. And so I've done them in modules as well. So hopefully I've got some germination on those. Because they're quite good plants because they put down quite deep roots. Have a bigger ability to tolerate the heat.
Because they're going down to find moisture.
Yeah, so they do. I've got some beautiful parsnips and carrots in one of my plots. So, I'll stop going. I mean, this packet of seeds is £2. If I don't get that much out of it, I'm not going to be heartbroken. So I'll just keep going, I think. And I think I've got a big, if August cools down or you get to the end of the month, I will sow again because I'll just try and get as much in before the end of the season, I think.
Yeah. I mean, what about the idea of keeping your seedlings in shade?
Well, I think that probably helps. Certainly not dark shade, but mottled sort of light is quite good, I think.
Yeah.
I think some gardeners prefer to put them in shady areas, but I don't think you'll get a lot of growth. They'll just sit, but that might be to your benefit because then you can obviously move them when the climate's more suited, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But to germinate them, you'll probably need a bit of light. So, yeah, the level of shade will count, I think.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And I'm thinking now about a bit of shade, actually, in my garden. And I quite often put plants under a tree just sitting on the grass, just to give them that little bit of shade.
In greenhouses, you can put netting up or they'll put the white snow up to protect the plants. Because otherwise you'll just get scorched. So it does make sense, yeah.
Yeah, I know. It kind of feels counterintuitive to be using a greenhouse at the moment.
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, on my polytunnel, blimey, if I've only to lose a stone, I'll just sit in that for a week.
Yeah, exactly. Sweat it out.
Honestly, It's absolutely roasting in there. And I've got all the, it's quite interesting watching all the lettuces, because I do some stuff like Little Gem and Romani and stuff like that, quite common stuff, but they just want to bolt, they just want to set seam. So I've taken to deadheading them quite regularly.
Yeah.
And that's worked. It means they bush out from the base and it's been quite productive. But if you're not there for a week, it's just like, that's it. They'll just go, poof, we'll set seam and that's the end of it.
And what about the flower garden? Because, you know, it's a lovely time of year, kind of, you know, especially going in towards September.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of, those gorgeous sort of echinops and...
Yeah, well, if you go for your dry garden material, like grasses and verbenas, salvias, all those sort of plants, those have been amazing this year.
And they like to be cut back.
Yeah, they do,
When it's very dry.
Yes, and they thrive in it. They don't, that may be the way forward in the summer if it's going to keep doing this, but you never know what's going to happen. But my bedding, I grow from all seed on the balcony, or grow from seed, is all look fantastic this year because it's been getting the moisture. The only thing I've stopped doing is feeding.
Right.
Because I think that normally I liquid feed. I think what happens is when it's hot like this, the plant shuts down, its stomata, it won't respire. So you're kind of like just letting that salty sort of build up in the soil, because I don't think the plant will be taking it up. So I kind of stop that. But it's, the colour's there, but you know, the balcony's doing well because I can water it twice a day.
Well, this is it, isn't it? Yeah. And also you're there to observe it as well, so you can keep on top of it.
It's quite close in gardening. Yeah, I sit 4 foot away from it when I'm watching telly, so can't really ignore it.
Do you deadhead a lot?
I was deadheading yesterday, The tomatoes have got quite leggy, and so I was tying those in. I've got a beautiful aubergine plant. It's in full flower, but it's not fruiting yet. But I've had amazing sunflowers as well, some beautiful sunflowers. And then Nicotiana, the nicotine plant, has been really colourful. So it's been a lot going on out there. But I am out there. I'm fiddling with it. And
that's all stuff that copes with heat. You know, it's all tropical.
Yeah,
kind of.
It's all built for the summer, basically.
I mean, obviously the views when you look out of the window, or, you know, I went on a train journey the other day and I kind of looked out and the landscape was almost white, you know, that it's not just green. It's not just green. It's almost white.
It's strawed up. Can't be easy for farmers. I'm interested to see what the effect of the season is going to be on them. Because obviously, and also with watering, you're paying for water now. It's all metered. So it's not like you can just throw it around willy-nilly. People think they can, but it's something we pay for. But it'd be interesting. I think there's a lot of early cropping that's happening because they know that, you know, it's...
And I think brassicas have been a real problem. I've had a real problem myself with brassicas just on my veg patch. And I can imagine in a farm setting, you know, flea beetle everywhere.
Flea beetle's just been incredible this year. And brassicas have been a write-off for me this year.
Yeah. Are you going to go again?
Yeah, I'll go. I was going to sow some spring cabbage and stuff. I'll do that. But it's interesting because they're usually reliable. You go, well, they look all terrible till about June and then they perk up. And by autumn, they look amazing.
Yes.
And so they're kind of always dead certs. I tend to ignore them a bit. Yeah. Not this year. They just look absolutely battered. The combination of the heat and the flea beetle is just... So if they're growing, say, in places like Norfolk, which is huge brassica production, it'll be interesting to see how they've coped.
It is, it's a wake-up call, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. We'd have to think about how we garden if this continues. It's been going on for a few years now. This year's been the most full-on, but it was pretty much hot as anything last summer and the summer before. So things like going into mazumas and Indian mustards and Italian kale and stuff like that might be the way forward. We might have to look at stuff that copes with the heat better. I'm certainly going to experiment a lot next year with that sort of thing.
And just going back to that water point right at the beginning, you know, what I'm thinking about is actually how can I maximise my water storage? I mean, I'm a bit half-hearted, to be honest.
Yeah, I am too. I'll be better at it.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and it's been a bit of a wake-up call. I've got a water butt on the shed. I've got a water butt on the garage.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, what am I thinking? I need about 15 water butts. And I could genuinely rig them up. It's all about kind of starting to think realistically about... You know, if this is the future, and even if it's not the future, we do need to be much more careful with it.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we are very wasteful with it. Mm. And focus watering, like the puddling, like making sure you do it the right time of day where you're not just watering the air. And deep watering, not flitting and often watering, all those things are going to count, definitely. They really are.
Yeah.
You have to imbibe them into your practices. That's the way forward with it. I think there are also, you know, there's some plants we are growing. It's been interesting, yeah, because a lot of our garden plants, hydrangeas, for instance, are a forest edge plant or like partial shaded plant. They're just all flagging and looking terrible because they're just not used to this kind of direct heat, you know. So we have to look at what we're planting as well, how we're planting it. And, you know, if you've got a hydrangea or a pyrus, maybe stick that under some bigger trees to shade it or think about its natural circumstances a bit more.
Maybe we'll start to be a lot more positive about shade.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, shade's a good thing.
Shade's amazing.
I went to see, it's that time of year, I've got to see my accountant this time.
Oh, okay.
I love this time of year. And anyway, I got to see her, the girl on reception's really lovely, and she's from Turkey, and she said, well, when it's hot in Turkey, we just get in the shade.
Yes.
It's only us who are walking around in the heat. So you apply that rule to plants to a certain degree, can't you? If it's hot, then get out of it.
Absolutely. I mean, we've talked a lot about, you know, the importance of trees and the importance of plants in an urban setting to cool things down. But I suppose in a garden, quite often we kind of, you know, we're not positive about shade because we think, oh, you know, if it's a shady garden, I can't grow anything.
Yeah.
But actually, we're now learning we can really value the shade.
I think so. So, I mean, my favourite type of garden is a woodland garden.
Yeah.
My favourite types of plants are woodland plants. So to me, it's a goldmine. I suppose it maybe causes problems because if you wanted to grow tomatoes and herbs and stuff that lights, a lot of food lights direct sunlight.
Yes.
So you'd have to consider that. But in terms of planting schemes, it's the ultimate platform as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, exactly. Love our shade. All right. Well, lots to be thinking about and lots to be planning ahead and, you know, trying to kind of make up for lost time, perhaps. So, good luck.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of, this is how I'm going to approach this now. We're kind of like, you know, the doldrums, the sea that doesn't move and you're kind of just stuck on it, the ship's stuck on it. It feels a little bit like that in terms of gardening. So stuff's not done as well as it has done in previous years for me. I'm looking at it and I feel a tinge of disappointment, especially if I look at my brassicas. But a bit of my mind's thinking, well, it'll be a couple of months and the weather will cool, the things will change and it'll be a new season. There'll be time to do other stuff. So you're kind of always in this sort of long corridor of optimism as a gardener, I think.
Yes.
So I kind of think we're in the doldrums now, but we'll be out of them soon.
We certainly will. Now it's time to answer some of your questions. So Chris and I are joined by Dr. Anton Rosenfeld. Hello, Anton.
Hello.
So first question is all about green manure, and Chris and I have just been chatting about that. Now, we know it's a huge topic, but it's getting a lot of attention and it's the right time of year to be talking about it, isn't it? So I wanted to ask you, if there was one all-rounder of a green manure that you would wholeheartedly recommend, taking into consideration the dry weather, what would it be?
I think in this dry weather, I'd go for Phacelia. It's the one that's most likely to germinate. It's got small seed and it's probably the most idiot-proof as well. It covers the ground well, and also it tends to get killed off by a frost, which is quite a good thing for no-dig gardeners. It goes down to quite soft material, so you don't end up with a lot of tough material at the end.
Mm. It's beautiful as well, isn't it?
It does look really nice, yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, when I was first introduced to Phacelia, and then I went and looked for Phacelia seed, I didn't realise it began with a P.
Yeah, I guess that's an easy mistake.
Yeah. So can anybody spell Phacelia? Anybody, there's a little bit of a spelling test here.
It took me years to find a chemist.
It's Phacelia.
Well done, Anton.
Well done, mate.
Exactly. At top pass. Of the class for the spelling bee. Really good. So once you've sown it, how do you look after it?
It's pretty easy, really. You need to make sure that you keep the soil a bit moist while it's germinating, and that might be a bit of a challenge in this dry weather. I think having a mulch in to start off with, having good levels of organic matter, and also I'd actually compact the soil and sort of tread it in, because normally most sort of commercial growers, when they sow a green manure, would go over it with a roller as well, just to
make sure
you've got that sort of good contact of the soil with the seed as well.
Okay, so don't just chuck it down, actually bed it in a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But don't sow it too deep, because it's quite a small seed. So.
I am. I'd surface sow mine and then raked over it and sod it. That's probably quite a good way to do it, isn't it?
Yeah.
There seemed to be quite good even germination from doing that.
Yeah.
I want to ask a question myself. In my veg patch this year, I've got absolutely loads of fat hen. I actually love it because I think it's pretty and it's edible and it doesn't bother me. And I've left it in situ because I'd rather have that than bare soil. But is it going to help? Is it going to do any good?
So if it's growing over the winter, it's going to stop... Well, it's going to stop nutrients leaching out of the soil, but also it will protect the surface of the soil. So, yeah, I think it's all right to leave it there. I probably wouldn't want it to go to seed. Once it starts dropping its seeds all over the ground, then you're going to end up with a nice...
A lot more of it. It does seed quite quickly as well.
And it pulls out easily, though.
Yeah, it does. It's hardly anything to it, but it's been the year for the fat hen. It just seems to be thriving in this heat.
Yes.
Enjoying itself immensely. It's the Roman in it. Then the Romans bring it. Maybe they like it.
Yes, exactly.
Spread the weather.
Italian heat.
Yeah.
Okay. So moving on to something completely different now. So we've been running a campaign to ban the use of glyphosate. And we've had quite an interesting question because a lot of people feel differently about maybe a pathway or a driveway when it comes to weed killer. And so I just wanted to read this question out. So Eddie has written in and said, I have a stone set drive on my property and I want to know if there are any suitable weed killers that I could use to stop grass and weeds growing on it. If I leave it, eventually the weeds will burrow into the joints and I shall have to have it repointed yet again. There's no organic matter there apart from a few weeds. If I used a weed killer, I would wash it away afterwards. So what's the impact of using weed killer on a driveway where there are no other plants? That's the first question. Does washing it away afterwards help? And what organic methods would we recommend? So there's quite a lot in here. Is it safe to use... any form of weed killer in that context, Anton?
So there's a number of weed killers that gardeners tend to use. I guess the most common one is still glyphosate, and that is popular because it is a systemic weed killer. It actually gets into the roots and so it kills the plants off. But putting it on your driveway, it's still a chance that it's going to permeate down into the soil. There's also a risk that it can drift as well when you're spraying it. He says he might wash it off as well. I think that might actually make things worse. You're more likely to wash the weed killer into the soil surrounding it. There'll be runoff. So, yeah, we wouldn't recommend using a weed killer on a driveway. I mean, there are other weed killers that are often sold to gardeners now that don't have glyphosate in. They're usually based on either acetic acid, which is a sort of more concentrated form of vinegar, or pelargonic acid, which is a naturally derived acid. These are not systemic. They will just scorch the leaves of the weed. So what will happen is you have to keep on using it again and again.
Oh,
to get
okay.
The plants will,
and have to keep buying it again and again.
Keep buying it. And in a way, you're sort of using a lot of material by using that.
So if you have a situation where you've got a driveway and just a few weeds coming up, what would you do? I mean, if you know, okay, so you can potentially pull them out, I realise, but maybe it's not practical to do that. Have you got any thoughts on this, Chris?
Well, yeah, obviously I look after quite big grounds and it was always an issue having weeds in the pathways and people worry about litigation, people falling, slipping. Mm. But I just say point it off properly, you know. Mm. A good pointing mix, if you look at the instructions and apply the right amount of moisture to it, it should really last a decade, if not more.
Yeah.
So look at maybe pointing it or get a decent builder in to point it. They'll know what they're doing. If not, boy, maybe try have a cup of tea, get your boiling hot water out of the rest of the kettle and pour that on your weeds and kill them off that way. You know, I think that I don't think there's any really 100% necessary you have to use pesticides to get rid of them.
No, I think that's right. Do you have other organic methods that you might recommend?
I mean, what's become quite popular now are the thermal heat guns. They used to be ones that used sort of propane gas, but now there are ones which are electrical and they're much more practical and easier for gardeners, and they're more concentrated. They've got sort of shield around them and then they focus it right on the weed itself. And you only need to use it for a short time to frazzle the weed. Mm. And that will actually help to sort of burn down towards the sort of growing point of the weed. It's much less likely to come back.
Okay. It's a worry, though, this time of year and with all these wildfires and everything, using any kind of heat source outside, isn't it?
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't want to be using a propane wheat burner in this sort of weather at all.
Not right now. Okay. Okay. On to cabbages now and flea beetle. this seems to be the flea beetle year from all reports we're getting. So Jane has written in, my lovely perennial cabbage is nearly at an end and now it's been invaded by flea beetles. Any idea what I can use to get rid of them? And that's the question from Jane. Well, first of all, Jane, great that you're growing a perennial cabbage. Can we just talk about that for a minute? If the cabbage is coming to the end of its natural life, what should Jane do?
Well, yeah, it's really great to be growing perennial brassicas. And there's quite a few perennial kale varieties, some African ones. There's Taunton Dean is another really popular one, particularly in this weather, because they basically, you're not having to water them nearly so much because they've got such a good established root system. They do tend to get a bit sort of woody after a few years. I found that you get lots of little woody branches off them. Probably by the time they reach that stage, the easiest thing to do is just to take a cutting off them and start them again somewhere else. That's, you know, they keep on going in that way.
Really. And you just take a cutting off a branch?
Yeah, you can literally just take one of the branches and peel it off. What I tend to do then is pull most of the leaves off it so it doesn't lose too much water and then plonk it in some gritty compost and they take
off
really easily.
Okay, brilliant. So that's a way to regenerate your cabbage. But is there anything Jane can do about the flea beetle? I mean, first of all, what is a flea beetle?
So the first thing you'll notice if you've got flea beetles, you'll find loads of little holes in the leaves. They're really tiny holes. And you'll probably see lots of little black beetles, which are about a couple of millimetres long. But the way to tell that they're definitely flea beetles is just to tap them and they go jumping around like fleas.
Okay.
So they live up to their name, basically. And on a lot of bigger plants, they're really not so much of a problem. They're more of a problem on smaller things like rocket. You find your rocket's just got loads of little holes in it. But this year, they've just been so prolific. They're really making quite a mess of the brassicas.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. I mean, how widespread are they? I mean, are they all over the country?
So flea beetles really like hot, dry conditions. So it is more likely that they're going to be in the sort of south and southwest. But to be honest, I've seen them in all sorts of places in the country this year.
Yeah. And we've talked about the damage and it kind of once you've spotted them, is there anything you can do? Is there anything you can do to prevent them?
Unfortunately, I haven't found many simple answers to flea beetle. If you put mesh netting over the crop, you just find it traps them in and it doesn't do anything at all, really. I found the best thing really is to plan what you're growing at certain times. So they particularly love oriental brassicas and they love rocket. So I tend to avoid growing those in the summer and grow them more as winter crops. So it's just suiting things really to the season seems to be the best way around to do
that. Yeah, planning ahead, thinking it through. Yeah, okay. So they love it hot, but if we can grow things when it's a bit cooler, then we won't have to manage the flea beetle, which is really an encouragement. Okay. Now, Chris, you've been very good and you've been very quiet, but I know that you're dying to ask Anton a question about tomatoes.
The quiet before the storm.
I know. So tell us more.
No, well, I thought it's been a really hot summer and I tend to associate hot summers with bumble crops of tomatoes.
Yeah.
And they have been, I grow a lot of tomatoes. I grow heritage varieties. I grow them in my professional life. It's been poor this year. It's been really poor. So I've got quite a lot of tomatoes that haven't ripened. I think actually they don't seem as loaded with tomato, but also I mean, it seems to have a problem with small tomatoes. The tomatoes don't seem to be putting on any sort of size. And I think maybe Anton's the man to help me out with this question.
Yes. Okay, Anton, tell us more. What is your take on this situation?
So just to say I share Chris's problem as well. Mm. We found at home that we've just got a lot of small tomatoes on the plants that aren't ripening. And apparently it's above about 30 degrees. The tomatoes really don't like it so much. And they also fail to produce this compound called lycopene, which is the red compound that you see in tomatoes. And so they just basically don't ripen so quickly. I mean, in hotter countries, I have seen them grow tomatoes with shade covers on them. So we have this sort of instinct, oh, tomatoes really like intense heat. But when it gets too intense, they don't ripen properly. So there are things we could do at home. We could, in my glasshouse, put a sheet of fleece on the south-facing edge of the glasshouse, just hung up with some clothes pegs, and you can actually see the tomatoes are doing better there.
Okay, it's made a huge difference already. I mean, would that affect it, even if it was like a purple skin tomato or a yellow tomato, would it be the same problem?
I think lycopenes are in both of those types of tomatoes from what I know, but
okay, so it's a chemical issue that kicks in when it gets too hot.
Yeah.
Golly.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? And it's, even in polytunnels, I quite like polytunnels. They've been, one is hot in that polytunnel at the moment.
Yeah.
So tray ventilations on a ventilated, something like that would help.
I guess so. And because the thing about tomatoes is it makes you feel like summer is definitely here, and they're so refreshing.
I know, it's kind of like I've been waiting for that glut.
Yes.
I think I've been spoiled by that. And I told you, I only just finished using last year's tomatoes up a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
So I was kind of waiting for that, and maybe not, you know, don't get it all our own way, do we, at this
it's
game?
Not too late. I mean, maybe when it cools down, would it then work?
Yeah, I mean, that's the chance. I mean, I seem to remember last year people were still harvesting tomatoes into November.
First frost, really, wasn't it, last year? Yeah. So don't give up, I suppose, is the cry. Yeah,
that's right. As with all of your gardening, don't give up. Doesn't matter that it's all got a bit too hot. Let's keep going, because, you know, some things do fine and some things don't. But the important thing is that we carry on growing food and also sharing this information. More we can share this information.
It's just like every day's a small day. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but it is, isn't it? No matter how long you've been in this game.
Well, exactly.
You're always finding stuff out.
And the changing conditions we're dealing with, you know, it just requires information. I mean, you do loads of this already. You gather in loads of information, don't you, Anton?
Yeah, we've been gathering information about the sort of crop season for I think about 4 years now, and it's been really popular, and we're hoping to build on that and make it even more sort of better for gardeners.
Yeah, okay. And we'll be writing all these things up. You know, these things are all on our website and in our magazine, The Organic Way. So if you're not a member of Garden Organic and you want to find out more about food growing and how to succeed at food growing, especially in the context of climate change, then, you know, why not join us?
Thanks so much for listening to this month's edition of the Organic Gardening Podcast. If you've enjoyed listening, please recommend us to a friend or leave us a review on your preferred podcast app. If you have a question for the podcast or you'd like to send us some feedback, do get in touch via email. We're podcast@gardenorganic.org.uk. Or you can message us on Facebook or Instagram. We're @GardenOrganicUK. Later on in the month, I'll be chatting with agroecology writer Nancy Matsumoto as she discusses her book, Reaping What She Sows, all about how women from around the world are rebuilding our broken food system. All that's left for me to do now is to thank Kevin MacLeod for the music, and we'll see you next time.